Welcome back to the Life on Target podcast. Nathan Spearing, your host, bringing you my interview with Matt Boudreau, the founder of Acton Academy Placer and Acton Academy. He's a career educator. Back-to-back educators here, y'all. Dr. Merkel, now Matt Boudreau. He is helping push education for teens across America into the 21st century. He hosts a podcast. He is also a world-renowned keynote speaker, speaking to over 250,000 people across the globe with key clients like Lockheed Martin, United States Air Force, Caterpillar, Honeywell, etc. It was just an honor to talk with Matt and get his perspective on education. And I think the conclusions that he made may hurt some feelings a little bit, but are backed up with fact. And he makes the claim that education in America is not necessarily about learning right now, or at least the school system is not, but it is an institution that's a lot like prison, and that we need to break out of that mentality. And that's really hard to do because schooling is a lot more like a religion than it is anything else. And we make a lot of decisions based on emotion. I also really like that he separates the institution from teachers and administrators that are actually in the trenches doing the hard work, that are good people, and is really good at making that distinction and focusing on the institution as a whole. And he's doing some amazing things with his family and with his over 300 school locations globally that are following his model. The conversation we have today is going to also be paradigm shifting with respect to education. I really hope you enjoy my interview with Matt Boudreau. So I'm here with Matt Boudreau. He's, say your name correctly.
I think so, man. I don't know. I always tell people, like, well, we grew up in California, so we say it all weird. And when I go to France or Canada, they say it all pretty. So yeah, I think you got it right, though.
All right. Awesome. So got a whole lot on your plate. Gracious enough to give Life on Target listener your time and to pull us out of some of our conventions. So listeners have been with us for a little while, so it's probably not going to surprise them that I'm anti-college in a lot of ways. I think the interview I listened to right before you said college is dead now.
Yes, sir.
Got me hyped up. Also, you're saying college is dead now, but you also have the ability to challenge a bunch of Ivy League faculty on that as well. So anyway, just fill the listener in on kind of who you are, your path to this point, and then we'll dive into this cool other stuff.
That's very cool. Yeah, glad to go anywhere that you anywhere you want to go, man. And I always I tell people I differentiate between school and education, and my whole career is built upon that. And I always give the caveat of, like, look, if you're a good human and you're a teacher, you're an administrator, you're in a conveyor belt school, man, I'm on your side. If you're a parent and you've got, you know, a young person who's in what I'm going to be calling the conveyor belt model, man, I am on your side as a good human being. I disassociate good people with a system that is intentionally anti-human. And that's where I, you know, start from. And so, I came to that, you know, conclusion through a wide variety of experiences, but I was at Stanford for a long time and worked there for a number of years. I was a public school teacher. I was a public school administrator. I was a private school teacher. I was a private school administrator. And I also spoke to, you know, over a 250,000 people around the world in Fortune 500 companies about how to lead, manage, retain good young talent. So I'm not coming at it from a place of anything other than experience. And I'm just explaining my own experiences. Having those experiences in schools is what caused me to leave those and build what I called centers that were really about education. I don't even like to use the word school. They were K through 12 age, but we had young heroes from 5 to 18 that were in there really working on education, you know, and they were building their own businesses. They were taking on experiences. They were setting their own goals. They were figuring out who they were. They were leading and running the organization. So, you know, I got to build a number of those. I get to help entrepreneurs build those all over the world. I also take about 150 or so families through home education. My friend Tim Kennedy and I run a mentorship program for young men. So I got a lot of balls in the air, but the common thread of all of those is I believe in young people and I believe in educating them, not schooling them. So everything I do, whether it's helping them directly, helping the parents, helping entrepreneurs, is to build good young human beings, because I think that's infinitely smarter that we start there rather than trying to fix a plethora of broken older people. It doesn't seem to me to be the way to go. So that's a whole lot truncated. I'm glad to talk about any and all of it.
Well, I guess some of the things that led you on that path initially, you know, if you look at you kind of the development in the hero kind of archetype,
yep.
You know, 5 to 7, 10 to 12, like there's a lot of who you are as a human being being facilitated. And even just recently in business coaching that I go through for my companies, you know, going back and seeing, you know, who were your mentors and the people that you admired at age 5 and 7 and 10 and, you know, and thinking about that forms who you are and what you value and how that's how critical education is. So maybe contrast or what in those age groups for you formed you into who you are and has given you the drive to do, it's the foundation that enables you to do what you're doing now.
Well, and it's, you know, and I love the way you frame that too. I appreciate that. So yes, there is an element of, I can look back now and connect dots as we all get the chance to do as we get older and theoretically wiser. You know, I can look back and I can see some of the formative stuff that happened during some of those years, but I can also recognize all of the things that I had to unlearn and be very, very intentional about doing so. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of, and this is where I get into my beef with schooling, is that it's not just about the what we're not learning. It's about what we're actually learning. It's about the habits that are being developed. So yeah, you're talking about all these developmental years, parents, mentors, experiences, all that plays so much into the development of the young person. But my biggest beef with the system of schooling are the habits, the sneaky habits that are built in as well under the guise of growth and learning that, quite honestly, most people never break free from, right? It's a slave mentality on purpose that most people never actually break free from. And I refer to schooling and the way we do it in our country, you know, this conveyor belt schooling model, I refer to it as a religion. I can intellectually walk somebody out of this. I give them the logical data points where they just go, yep, 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 yep. Cool. Ready to pull? It's the emotional attachment to the religion of this. Oh, but what about algebra? But what about college? But what about prom? But what about, right? And this emotional, if I do this, what's my mom going to say? What's the neighbor going to think? What are they going to be looked at as, right? We've got this weird emotional attachment to it. So that's the biggest thing, is I actually had to unlearn a whole lot more. And that's what happens with our young kids. You know, you talked about kind of that 5 to 7, right? And think about what parents do with your young hearers. If you've got kids, think about, you know, you've done this. They're young and they're learning something. They're learning to walk, right? Mm-hmm. What's happening? They're pulling themselves up. They're these little toddlers. They're pulling themselves up on the couch or something, and they're shuffling along, and you're going, oh, okay, this is awesome. And they turn toward you and they start to take a couple of steps, right? And they're very wobbly. What happens? They fall on their butts. They just failed at walking. What do you do as a parent when that happens, though? You go, yes, way to go. That's awesome. And they're like, ooh, okay. The failures are being encouraged. They're being cheered on because you know on the other side of that is the success. Keep failing at that and they're going to be successful, right? We cheer them on when they're little and we don't necessarily have a time frame associated with it. I always tell people, I didn't learn to walk until I was 18 months old. So was I behind? Did I end up being a 5'9 white guy that could dunk? I end up being a really good fighter. I end up being a really good basketball. I end up being a really good athlete. But it wasn't a timeline associated. Oh, okay, something's wrong with them, you know, whatever. But then we get to school at five. And we start to go, well, there's a time frame for learning things. And by the way, learning looks very, very specific, but it sure as hell doesn't include failure. Don't fail. Don't fail. If you fail, you're behind, right? And we start to shift the mindset around what all of this looks like. That's schooling. It's not education. That's the problem.
So what was the mechanism for you to unlearn it or to want to? Because obviously Stanford, those other places, they're pretty regimented, you know, conventional, maybe at the higher ends of conventional. But what was the moment for you? I mean, I can equate, I was in the military. So, you know, I was homeschooled and it was unstructured in a sense and was very self-paced for me. The thing is I didn't read till I was a lot older. I would have been considered behind. I would have been put behind in everything. But because I was homeschooled, I could keep doing math. You know, I could keep doing these things at a 5-6 year grade level. I know you love grade levels too. That's something that's
a real thing, right?
And my mom was able to be like, all right, you know, and she can public school educated, college degree, you know, had to get counsel from someone else and be like, it's going to be okay. You know, just he's all right. He's a boy. That sometimes that just happens, especially with boys. They're busy. They're outside. They're playing. Just let him do, you know, kind of the things. And I remember going through testing, you know, why does he not, you know how to, you know, and is he dyslexic? And yeah, okay, there's some of that. There's some of these other things, but I can look back and clearly I wasn't made to feel inferior because of that. And that was huge to be able to kind of keep doing. So I guess, you know, but then I get to the military and it's an institution that does things a certain way. I like the military over Department of Education because the fact that people are possibly going to get killed still keeps you a little bit more tethered to reality. But there's still government. There's still centralized stuff. There's still lethargic stuff that just ripples through.
And I like that too. One of the greater mentors in my life on the education side is a man named Larry Rosenstock, who started the High Tech High academies in the San Diego area. And even though I'm not a huge fan of most charter schools because it's public school anyways, there's not much difference. What Larry has done with that specific group of charter schools has been phenomenal. So I always look up to him in his thoughts on education. One of the things he said to me years ago was that complex structures beget very, very simplistic thinking. And the reverse is also true. If you want to allow somebody to grow and to think in a complex fashion and truly go for what education should be, then you provide simplicity in that. Now, the military needs complexity in their structure because they have a very, very specific goal. And there are very, very specific, like you said, outcomes that can take place if that's not met, right? So it's going to need simplistic thinking. Complex, but simplistic, yes, sir, that's my mission and I'm on it, right? So you need that. But when we start to go over into education, the root word means to draw out. So there's two parts of being a world-class educated human being. One, it's drawing out what's naturally inside you. What are your gifts? What is your unique gifting, right? It's gaining some self-awareness and some self-confidence around that and drawing that out. But then it's also giving you the ability to scaffold, okay, how do I take that? Who do I want to be? Who do I want to be with that? And what skills do I want to develop so I can go forward and impact the world? Well, those are very, very complex things. And so we need a much more basic structure other than this complex system that we have built around schooling and all of these standards, you know, of academia and putting academia on a pedestal as if that's what's going to draw out the uniqueness of every individual. And that's clearly false. And you look at where education or schooling actually came from, you know, it was this Prussian model that was designed for the Industrial Revolution. Mm-hmm. Period, end of story. There's no debating that. And, you know, Rockefeller at the time put what would be akin to like $1.2 billion into making sure he had some control over that when it first came. And his words were, I want workers. I don't want thinkers. Mm-hmm. Those are his words, not mine.
Yep.
And so there's a reason that the model looks the same, you know. And so going back to your original question of where did that kind of turn for me, I was lucky enough to start to see these patterns. I always tell people I actually started seeing the patterns when I was little. I remember seeing the patterns in school. That's why I got straight A's all through school, because I saw the pattern, not because I'm that smart. I just saw the patterns of how to get the good grade and keep everybody else off my back so that I could play sports and talk to girls, right? Like that was it. So I saw the patterns. At Stanford, I started seeing patterns and going, interesting. Yeah, he's probably smarter than me with his organic chemistry, you know, books and all that. That's great. But this kid's a mess. He's not at peace. He's not happy. He's super stressed out. He didn't know how to write a check. He's crying because of, you know, like, okay, so what's going on? I started seeing the patterns in the admissions process going, wait a second. I thought this was a meritocracy. There's an element of that, but it's like seven or eight layers deep. There's a whole bunch of games you play prior to that. Interesting. Well, maybe I'll fix things as a public school teacher, and you start to see the patterns and go, wait, I'm being told this kid needs algebra. When he goes home, his parents are telling him to sell drugs from the porch, and he's already in a gang and he's 13. He doesn't need algebra.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm seeing these patterns continuously play out, and naively, but thankfully going position to position to try to solve those. Public school, I can't fix these kids as a teacher. Maybe I'll be an administrator. Oh, okay. Now this is more about money and more about politics. I'm not going to fix it here either. Maybe I'll go private school. Oh, private school models after public school. Pattern to pattern to pattern to pattern. And it was finally like, you know, I've got my own kids that are now going to be of age. I got to have something that makes sense because I can't look at myself with any sort of integrity if I know all these issues and send my own kids into this. And so that's where it turned. That's where it turned for me.
And then, so talk about from that, you know, what azimuth did you set? What course did you get on, and what was the build to where you are now? I know you have hundreds of locations globally, and even just the understanding of the autonomy that is there, but then also I'm in the process of developing, you know, systems and IP within in the boutique construction industry area. So I can understand, you know, how much I had to learn to get to where I could actually make money in a business, and how school of hard knocks. So really understanding the value of having somebody that's like, look, we've done this hundreds of other times.
Yeah.
Here's the part that you don't really, really need to reinvent. This is the wireframe that enables the magic to happen, and you can get going right away. You know, the size of it, all that stuff. So, you know, walk us through that progression for you, from zero to one in a sense, and then, you know, one to hundreds.
And zero to one's always the hardest, right? In any kind of industry. And, and I've told people this, and nobody necessarily gets it until they start to do it. But, you know, Tim Kennedy being one of my dear friends who was going, ah, man, I've got a bunch of other businesses. I'm going to start a school too. And I'm like, cool, man. Awesome. Way harder than any other business you have.
Different industry.
Tenfold at least. It's going to be fine. And then he's going, what the f-? You know, it's like, yeah, dude, it is hard, man. Because you're dealing with people's kids, and you're dealing with that. You're in essence trying to get a community of people to start a new religion. I mean, that's almost like what, you know, or not necessarily start a new one, but leave an old one for sure.
Well, and we have a university model school at our church.
Yeah.
And we have the same religion in a sense. This is, we want to give our kids Christian education.
Yep.
But yet that ability, that belief in truth and those things takes a back seat sometimes to this cultural religion at his school.
That's right. You know? That's right. And everybody's coming at it from a different angle. They all agree on, we think this is what we want, but nobody is coming at it with the exact same way to get there. And so then you get all of this and you get, it's a tough nut to crack. So that 0 to 1 is definitely the hardest part. And so, you know, I had the wherewithal and the good fortune. It was definitely both, to not have to take any money while we were building up Campus One. I was simultaneously, that's when I started really speaking, and traveling around and speaking to the Fortune 500 companies, which also helped because I could hear directly from the HR managers, the CEOs and everybody, right? This is what we're not seeing in our young people that we're hiring. These guys are Harvard and Stanford and MIT grads. They're really, really smart and they suck. And we want to fire all of them. This is why, this is what we're seeing. This is what we're not. So I could take that back to what we were building and that helped, but it also helped on the financial side. So I could support my family doing that while building out the school and taking my time. I took a year and a half to build out that first campus. And that year and a half, I mean, I probably did 100 keynotes as well. So, right. So there was about a 7-year stretch where I worked 7 days a week. So I don't want to make it, I mean, that's the reality of it. And so while building this out though, you know, we launched our first campus and probably only had 60 families. That's after me interviewing 400 or 500.
Nice.
So oh, yeah. that was the key.
And that was interviewing parents and are you going to commit to this and trust me?
Bingo.
That this is going to work.
Trust me. And do you actually trust your young heroes? Do you actually trust the way you have parented? Do you actually trust, right? It's a lot of that. Cause that's another big underlying thing of why parents want to send their kids off to a quote unquote traditional conveyor belt, like proven model, is because it allows them to go, okay, at least education's out of my hands. Right? And that's the reality, is you're still the primary educator for your kid, no matter what. Even if you're sending them off to a conveyor belt school, they're watching you, how you live your life. Do you like your job? How's your relationship with your spouse? How's your relationship with friends, family, the world in general, right? How do you live your life? You're always the primary educator, but parents want to offshoot that. So I'm asking parents, do you trust yourself in the way you're leading? Do you trust yourself to continue to get better? And do you trust your young heroes that they're going to be able to figure it out? Like, that's what I'm looking for. So, you know, once we had that in place, that is what I think, that foundation is what allowed us to go to a full campus with a wait list after year one, which is in the business world of schools, any kind of privatized education, you're hoping to break even somewhere between year 3 and 5. We were in the green from the get-go. And I think that was a part of it, running very, very lean, and very intentional. And I didn't take any cash from that. That's what allowed us to then go, okay, we've got a wait list. We're not going to keep you on a wait list. We're going to open campus 2 and run the same thing with clearing out any of the mistakes we learned here. Right. And putting systems in place to where I didn't any longer have to interview 500 people. I had systems in place to where a lot of that interviewing just ended up being automated and filtered to where I only had people that had gone through this filtering system. And now I've got an auditorium. Instead of doing one-on-one interviews, I've got an auditorium of 100 that were filtered down from 1,000, and I can interview those 100 and bring in 10, and 10 kids will come shadow, and then maybe they end up coming in. So systems mattered quickly.
So talk through then from that. So campus 1 and 2, geographically pretty low, like when, how did you take that to global, and what is it? I guess, you know, even taking that global specifically, why are people in local communities buying into this model now, you know, and then, and what we can glean as leaders in our community, you know, looking at the last 2 years, looking at, and say, there's gotta be a better way to do this, you know, principles that we can, you know, just take us through that.
Man, so you hit the nail on the head, because what's happened is for years, everybody listening to this knows somebody, or maybe they are that somebody, or maybe it's both, where they go, ah, school's a mess. School's broken. The school system's broken. Everybody has either said it or knows somebody who has said it. Two things with that. One, school's not broken. It's doing exactly what it's intended to do. Exactly. They're doing it very, very well. It's just not supposed to be something that's beneficial for humans. Two, with the whole pandemic situation, people finally started to, it wasn't as out of sight, out of mind, right? For parents, they were seeing some things. It just spurred people to actually take action and realize, wait a second, there's other ways to do this. Mm-hmm. And people got motivated by the fact that other people, a big reason people don't pull their kids out of school is because of all these myths that they're hanging on to. The homeschool kids are always weird, or there's no socialization, or they can't get into college, or all of this garbage nonsense, because people would rather be comfortable going with the crowd, even if they think something sucks. So when they saw more and more people start to question it, it just became this kind of snowball where more and more entrepreneurs, especially, were like, cool, man, wait a second. You can actually build something in your own community and just kind of, okay, let's think about this. So it just started those conversations. And we had some big entrepreneurs that came out and started being very public about, you know, what we were doing. Obviously, Tim, you know, wanting to launch one of these campuses, that helps. Seth Godin talking about what we were doing. Gary Vaynerchuk talking about what we were doing. Damon John talking about what we were doing. And that just kind of put it on the map for people to go, oh, okay, well, what does this look like? How do I do this? And so now, you know, the process is more, how do we make sure, kind of like we're filtering with the right, you know, want the right parents, we want the right entrepreneurs. You know, I think we're looking at something like 18,000 applications to open, you know, a campus like this. And that's, you know, it's not a pay to play kind of organization. It's a network. It's a decentralized network. This isn't a franchise. It's a decentralized network of good humans that want to do it differently. We want to make sure we get the right people doing it for the right reasons, who believe the right things about young people and the difference between school and education. And that's not easy to find.
So I also heard you say, I guess one of the things that I feel like that has given you, and the circles that you've run and the people that you've had to talk to, that differentiating, you alluded to it pretty quickly at the beginning, but saying, you know, teachers, administrators, like, it's not you, you know, right. and having right. the ability to acknowledge that up front, because, you know, there's a public school librarian that goes to church with me, you know, one of the sweetest human beings that I can having relationship with actual people in these roles is it tempers or helps you actually get down to the, you know, in the social media land, you can get on and blast about and rant about these things and then be like, yeah, I'm making a lot of progress because of how many people I offended, you know, but ultimately this requires grassroots and it requires evangelism, you know, for the benefit. You know, I'm not preaching the gospel to somebody because I think it's going to make their life worse. I am living it in my life, and I believe it's given me the framework. It's enabled me to do this. So being able to say, and that even, you know, in the evangelical culture, to say, look, it's not that I dislike you as a human being. I believe you were created for something more than what sin has done to you. And you don't know what you're capable of if you can put this behind you. So just that ability to say, you're a teacher, you believe in kids like thriving. Right. Like very few public school teachers are, you know, I think we've seen some of the videos come out with the wokeness. That's just disgusting. So there are predatory teachers that exist, but it would be, in just my guess would be, it would be very similar to the true percentage of our population that espouses these views. So, you know, 2% of teachers are going to be acting like this. The rest of them love our children, daughter. Want them to excel.
Bingo. You've got a small percentage now. Where the percentage gets larger is when you start getting into the teachers unions and things like that. Mm. And that's a whole different game, because those are the ones that have been driving this long tail project of like, let's get to the early sexualization of children, and let's get to this, you know, daddies don't matter, and we can have 14 mommies and you can identify as a T-Rex. Like this has been a long tail game that I told people about 2 decades ago. And they're like, what are you talking about? Like, it's coming. This has already been, it's already been decided that this is coming. And that's how you say that sounds conspiratorial in nature, but the reality is. Yeah,
those people got laughed out of the room, and you probably did too. Like,
bingo, for sure. Yeah. But here we are, and I don't need to be right about anything. I just need to make sure my kids are good and I can help as many as possible, right? Mm-hmm. Period, end of story. So you're right. You've got this very small percentage that truly are anti, just like you have a small percentage in any system. You have a small percentage, you have predators in the church, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just the reality of it. And the hardest part is that when I am, you know, kind of evangelizing for this difference between education and schooling, I always want to be careful of two things. One, I don't want to be the guy, I won't be the guy that just complains about something I'm not willing to fix, right? So I didn't even really run my mouth about any of this until I had solutions in place, because I don't believe in complaining, period. If you're going to point out flaws in something, you better be willing to work on fixing that. So that was always very, very important to me. I didn't want to just run my mouth and not do something about it. I didn't want to run my mouth about, oh, school's this, school's that, and send my own kids to it. I can't live hypocritically, period, end of story. So that was a big part of that. The other part, you know, of wanting to continuously remind teachers and educators that I am on their side, it is one of the more difficult pieces, because I am so adamant about the system itself. People still, even if they hear I'm on your side, but I attack the system, a lot of their identities are caught there, and they still can't quite get around it and be okay with it. Right? Like if I said, look, man, I love Christians, but Christianity as a whole is completely a mess. If I said that, there's an emotional piece inside of you who's like, I identify with that though. Mm-hmm. So if you're saying that's a mess, I don't actually think you like me. You don't see that. Yep. It's like, right. And that's where the teachers are, you know, so much in the school. And I'm like, man, I wish I could show you how I was that. I still have friends that are that. I believe you. Let's take a look at the system, man. And you make your own call. It's tough.
Yeah, no, that's, I guess, life has gotten easier at doing that lately. I think that's those of us that see solutions to what's going on. This is the most exciting time to be alive in some ways, because when people hit rock bottom, they're crying out for something else. When you can't deny that what's being fed your children is good, is toxic, you can't deny it anymore, and you're looking for something better, I guess that's the thing is, and a lot of guys will, in our circles, when you say the church is a mess, Christianity is a mess, they're like, amen, you know?
Yeah.
Like the institution, the same institutional kind of things that were in place for public school have affected in similar ways. And I guess that kind of goes back to that, why you named your school the way you did, is when you centralize power and humans are involved, then you get corruption, you get abuse of power, and decentralizing. And that's why I like where I stand. The household, pre-industrial revolution household. I love that you are identifying. We're on the same page there. I don't know if you know about like Rory Groves. He has durable households. He's done that exhaustive study on vocations. So it's tied to work. It's tied to skill. What has existed since the beginning of time. And then also the reality being that you know, 65, 70% of households had small businesses, you know, right. And the way that I run my house, and I'm sure that it's with you, like your kids are hearing you have discussions about cash flow. You're having kids, you know, inventory and brand quality and all these kinds of things that are getting, they're getting exposed to at the dinner table.
That's right.
And that was normal for a farmer, a blacksmith. You know, the one room schoolhouses, you went to church with your teacher. You know, your mom's going to have a sideline conversation about how you acted. There's this, in a sense, you can't get away from your identity and your place in the local community. And Rockefeller is on the front end of these superstructures, these giant businesses, these huge kind of things. And you know, you're getting traction in Fortune 500 because they're looking to innovate. They're not looking to do it the same old way. And and so, you know, I don't know. It's just, it's very exciting. You know, talk about a little bit on the home front and what you're saying with your kids and how that even plays out. I think you mentioned the one example I heard you talk about, like city planning happening at some of your schools and like turning power on. There's a real event going to happen. You got to be ready for it. And these thinking through the systems and all that. So maybe.
That's exactly right. And so you're differentiating between education and schooling, right? Schooling mm-hmm. is a very distinct system that systematically doesn't map out to really anything else in our society other than the closest system that we can identify in terms of the day-to-day. What does it look like? A bell rings. Somebody is always in authority, tells you what to do, when to do it, stand in a straight line, probably wear a uniform. The closest system we have is prison, period. Period.
It's love
by
it.
Far. Like, and it's, that's again, not accidental. So.
And why are boys so mad about being in prison? I don't understand.
I don't understand. Yeah. You know, right. So we've got the school part and the education centers, our Acton academies. And then we've got the home education part of that too. So at the Acton academies, what you alluded to are these exhibitions, right? And so we have our heroes take on real world projects. So they are taking on throughout the day, they're setting their own academic goals. They're learning to lead Socratic discussions with one another. They're taking on responsibilities on campus. Maybe you're the chef. Maybe you're responsible for going in and providing direct instruction for some youngers. Maybe you're outside working on the playground. Maybe you are outside building. I had students that built, we needed a kind of like a storage shed. So part of their project was they wanted to go out and actually build the shed, and they ended up creating a bunch of tiny homes as well in the community. Mm. And they're all starting businesses, and they're all, so they're doing these real things. And then they have these exhibitions where we'll bring the community in, and they have real world work that is brought to the community, whether that's the business fair, where they're all bringing individual businesses, products and services to the market. And people go, oh, that's cool. That's cute. No. We have high school students who have made six figures in these businesses.
Oh,
always,
man.
People, we had horses at my ranch in California because my daughters bought the horses when they were 9 and 7 based on the money they made in their businesses. Mm. So it's not cute. It's real.
Yeah.
You're alluding to the electricity quest where all of the campus worked together. And that means the 5-year-olds up to the 18-year-olds, they all had a piece of putting together this model community, a physical model. Some, you know, utilize Legos, we utilize clay, we utilize 3D printers, we utilized cardboard, and everybody had a different component of that. We had to put that all together in a big giant warehouse sort of area, and then we had to run electricity to it. They had to figure out, how do we run electricity? And the exhibition was, we got all the families and community that's there, and we're flipping that switch in front of everybody, work or not. It's a learning experience. We're not giving a grade. We want the experience of education, right? So all of those things. Now take it to the home front. You know, we moved out here to North Carolina eight months ago. We're on a farm out here in North Carolina. I don't have a campus out here. And unless we find an entrepreneur who wants to, I'm not going to start one out here. Unless we find an entrepreneur that wants to do it, I'll help, you know, him or her do so. But we're on the farm. So my kids every day are still self-directing their own academics. They are taking on projects and challenges that I, the same ones that I release to all of my homeschool families that I help. And every month has a different theme of what they're looking at. So they're, this whole month is about personal finance. So they're diving into all kinds of things. They're always looking at our family cash flow and how all of our businesses work and how the money goes through the various trusts that we have and through our 501c3 foundation. And hey, why do mommy and daddy not have to pay taxes when everybody else does? And how is that legal? Because it is. Right. Mm-hmm. And so they're understanding all these things. We sell some animals here and somebody comes to buy it. My 9-year-old greets them at the gate and is like, hey, welcome. Here's your bill of sale. I need you to sign, you know, I need you to sign this part here. I'll take a picture. This will be our copy. You can hand me the cash. It's going to be this amount. They're doing real world work all the time. And that's not normal. Are they sitting down and having somebody lecture them on algebra or his? No, they're not. Are they being educated? You bet. World-class level. They're diving into classics every day and we're having conversations around that. And we're getting into heroic thinking. What would you have done if you were here? If you were in this case, right? All of those things are educating the young people. All of
them. Well, and I think that what drove me nuts about the aspects of my education, you know, is still the similar subjects. What was cool about it for me was that it wasn't based on time. You know, the military talks about to time, not to standard, you know, and that rings true in everything. So the fact that I was able to allocate my time a certain way and I knew what the outcome was, get this lesson done, you know, and I didn't have to sit, and I've talked about this before, being able to do all my math for the week one day so that I could play the rest of the week. You know, I got to get 5 lessons done, you know, lesson a day. I can do them all right now. I can get up at 5 a.m. at 13. I can bang them out in 2.5 hours, 3 hours, and then I can go play with my best friend outside the rest of the week, you know, and that was awesome. But I think that, you know, the other part of the institutional side and what we're trying to do, and my son, 10 years old, has a laying flock and is delivering eggs every time we go to church, you know, and is actually has an inventory, like low inventory for what the market needs. So we're talking about, okay, do we expand this? You know, how do we do this?
Right.
And so I think that, it's pretty amazing that your kids are doing that business. And I think that money for a kid is real. Like I used these skills. It gives me a thing that I can use to get other things. I can buy. And when you tie that back and even I lost money, you know, and I had to have a conversation in the farm last night. Like you don't get to go to sleep yet. You know, the chickens are not put up. Your brother reminded you it's your business and your brother reminded you, you know, in the future, you're going to pay him for that. You're going to pay him for reminding you because that actually equals loss of your flock. That equals these things. And when there's a dollar amount tied to that, at 10, he gets it. Like I could see it on his face, like, shoot, I am not going to forget this again because I want to, if I can do the service myself, if I can have the responsibility here, then I get it. What are the ages of your kids?
Oh, good, man. How valuable is that? Mine are 11, 9, and 6.
Okay. Dang. So, yeah, those are fun years. A lot of fun years. And they're making connections that you never really thought. I mean, you probably have seen it because you've been in education. You've been seeing kids make these connections. But just what they're capable
right.
of doing exactly. is incredible.
Exactly right. And I've had the good fortune because of my career path to have uncovered that earlier. But you're exactly right. We do not keep the bar at the level that they are capable of reaching, culturally speaking. We have lowered the bar. I always tell people, you know, the word teenager didn't even exist until 1944 in our country. Mm. It wasn't even a thing because you were just, okay, 13, great. You're kind of an adult, man. So like, let's work or get married and start having kids. You know what I mean? Like it was, you were expected to be able to handle some things. Well, our DNA and our capability hasn't changed in those 80 years. Our expectations have changed. Our expectations for just humanity in general, we're lowering the bar, you know, for everybody, not just kids. We're lowering the bar for everybody. I mean, adults are lowering the bar for themselves too, which is making being an adult unattractive to our kids, who are then perpetuating adolescence. It's a big cultural issue, but it gets fixed by getting back to the young people and raising the bar for them, and they'll meet it, man. They're so capable. You just got to not get in their way, and not get in the way meaning crappy parenting, meaning sending them to a conveyor belt model where they're getting distractions, meaning having them live on iPads and video games, meaning, you know, giving them a bunch of toxic garbage, meaning, you know, it's those kind of things that are massive distractions for our young people.
So let's do it practically. You know, we talk a lot about on this podcast about having a productive household. Yeah. And in some ways that doesn't necessarily mean you got a real estate portfolio, you own your own business, and you got passive, you know, everything's covered passively and this and that. Sure. Although you and I both know it's better from a tax perspective. There's better things to do that. Like you can structure your life in a way that because you're adding value to the market, the government isn't penalizing you. And there's structures in place to do that. But for somebody who's working 9 to 5, their kids in a school, they feel like they can't, they know in their core that they should pull them out, that they should homeschool, that they should find a private school. They're immediately thinking, I can't, inflation, gas prices, I can barely even pay the rent. How am I going to pay for my kids to go to a private school? You know, I just got like there is an acceptance, you know, you're laying down at night as a parent and you're thinking, I failed at some stuff. So there's some self lack, there's some self-hatred, self-loathing that's there that shouldn't be there. And then the fact that you don't see a way out for your kids. And so, you know, talk to them. You know, I just had a previous guest on. It's like, as a man, first of all, you got to acknowledge you're capable of a whole heck of a lot more with your time, and you have to start leveraging your discretionary time, your free time, you know, because that's if you break a week out 168 hours where actually that's going to value producing activities, you're going to be, if you're honest about it, you can scroll right on your iPhone, see screen time and get that feedback pretty quick, whether it's actually going to stuff, but just, you know, talk me through, or what you say to guys that are able to get in front of you and the guys that are just able to listen to this, and what do you do? What's the steps? Yeah. Where do I go?
We had a whole conversation around this at, we did an event at one of my campuses earlier this year called Man Uncaged. And it was myself, John Lovell. John's a dear friend of mine, Ryan Mickler, Bedros Koulian, Ray Kerr. All these guys are probably, you know, Jack Donovan, Tanner Guzzi, Stephen Mansfield, just phenomenal men, you know. And we got together, we actually all went to Mexico last year and kind of planned this whole deal going forward, right? And so we talked very, very specifically about this. And so one of the things that I bring men back to, and I was talking about this on stage, is you know, Mike Glover said something to me one time, and he was talking about the soldiers that walk in front of the tomb of the unknown soldier, right? Yeah. And it talks about you know, that they say, my standard shall always remain perfection. And for men, they need to understand, you've screwed up as a parent. I've screwed up as a parent. You're gonna screw up. Like, that's, I get it, man. And everybody says, you know, hey, understand that and have grace. Yes, have grace for yourself, but your standard should always remain perfection. I don't always like the fact that we use, hey, have grace, because you're gonna mess up. Because we almost, it's kind of like that whole everything in moderation mentality. It's cheap. And most people will use that as an excuse to still suck. And I don't think that's okay, right? So I like our standard. Am I ever gonna be the perfect father? No. Am I ever gonna be the perfect husband? No, I'm not. Am I gonna be the perfect version of the man that God designed me to be? Nope, I'm gonna miss it. But I should be striving for it every single day. I should strive to be the perfect dad, the perfect husband. I should be striving for it, knowing that I'm going to miss it, right? So take that mentality, and you started hitting the nail on the head. So first of all, what can you actually add? All right, if you take a look at time, one of the first things we do with the Apogee program is we have young men audit their time. And it's not because time management is a young person problem. It's just a person problem. Where, what can you actually add? If you're taking a look at your schedule, then it's actually two things. What can you add and what can you cut out? Right? What can you add to? Do you have a place where you can find an extra hour because it's really just kind of there and you're not utilizing it? Or what, more likely, can you cut out? Can you cut out the TV, the Netflix, the I've got to sit for 3 hours on this football game, I've got to scroll this amount of time, I've got it, like, what can you actually cut?
So you went after football, dude. I can't believe that.
Right? So many people.
How dare you?
It makes so many people mad too when I say stuff like that. I'm like, dude, if the amount of dads that got super fired up around their fantasy football team would get that fired up around their own family, things would change overnight.
Wow. Yeah.
That's just the reality of it. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's like, where can you add? Where can you cut? So let's be intentional about our time. And then what do we do with that time? So you have to go, okay, well, what is the actual need for us right now? Do I need to take that time and build out a side hustle that earns more income? Do I need to take that time? And is it more important that right now, what I do is spend that time in a quality fashion with my young heroes to actually provide an education? Because right now they're getting schooled. But do I actually sit down and go, okay, so let's do something together. Let's build a business together. Let's read these classics and have conversations together. Like, maybe your time is best spent right now, if you only have a little bit, pouring into the education side of it, right? Seth Godin, has been very, very wildly supportive of our schools and is a phenomenal human. He's been so gracious in his time. I've gotten to learn so much from him. He's been gracious with his time on that. But he says, broke my heart, man. My kids wanted to go to public school, to conveyor belt school. So he's like, so I just took it upon myself to make sure education happened as soon as they got home. Mm-hmm. And so dads, you can do that. Don't feel like you're a failure, but be intentional about that. What does that time actually look like? And how else can you bring in good mentors, for them? Other mentors matter, right? As we're building out our young heroes, their internal dialogue, that inner voice, it starts out as our own. It starts out as us. Especially as dads pouring into them, that internal voice starts out as our own. And then as they get older, they start looking for other ways to build that, right? Your voice is still there, but it's not as important to them. They're looking for other avenues. So you've got to be intentional about what those other avenues are too. What books, what movies, what mentors, what friends, what cultural influences, like, you've got to help cultivate that, not in a controlling way, but in a supportive way. You've got to be on this journey with them, together. And then the same thing for them. What distractions can we eliminate? If you've got them on video games all day, you're doing them a disservice. I don't care what school you've got them going to. Even if they're going to an acting academy and then they come home and they're on video, they're playing video games for 4 hours, you're doing a disservice to your young heroes. You're feeding them a bunch of Cheetos and Skittles and a bunch of crap. You're doing them a disservice. You're not letting them get outside and run around and get in the sun and get dirty and be physically active. You're doing them a disservice. You're medicating them early and often because some teacher told you they can't sit down and some doctor went, cool, they must have a methamphetamine deficiency at 5 years old. Cool, you're doing them a disservice, right? Mm-hmm. So there's so many things we can take inventory of. I always just tell people, what's your standard of perfection? What would the perfect dad do? What would he look like? What would the perfect schedule look like? And then we start adding and chopping until we can get as close to that as we possibly can.
Yeah. And it's amazing how writing that stuff down individually, your wife doing it, talking to your kids about it. Where are you hoping to go with this? And let's put it on paper because it's a snapshot. And then let's reevaluate it at a regular interval. And then let's see, have we gotten closer, and the reality that you think your life's going to look like this straight line and I'm just going to get there. When I'm doing land nav in the military, I got to go around trees. I got to go through a creek. I'm not going to go straight because there's a big old briar patch there. Like, you're still going to get to the destination, but the indirect route sometimes makes more sense. You got to go do this first. And I think that's something the traditional model makes you think it's all linear,
That's right.
And even out of the homeschooling side of it, to say, hey, it's okay for my sons to jump in the truck with me, go to this client's house, inspect this work, talk with the client, talk with the subcontractor, watch me write a check, have a couple conversations. We're in the truck. You know, I got to put my phone away. I got to engage them in the car and not worry about way off and Instagram land and, you know, and harness the moments where I'm at.
Yes, sir.
You can have the, I mean, I think what would be bizarre for somebody to realize, like, you can homeschool your kid and it could literally not even happen until you got home from work. And yeah, you're gonna go 5:30 p.m. to 9 o'clock, you know, four dedicated 3 to 4 hours, you know, but you can't call it school.
And you don't want to don't recreate the school model.
Exactly. Yeah.
Again, that's not what human development is all about. You don't need to recreate that model either. You're right. That's exactly right. You can do it at night. You can do it through conversations. You can do it through books. In fact, if you wanted to still be educated to a world-class level, I would argue that you could do that for free with YouTube and a library card. And I'm saying world-class education.
Mm-hmm.
People go, well, no, because the teachers, because of the subjects, because no, that's schooling. Mm-hmm. World-class education can be gained through both of those. And it's, you know, yeah, I love the way you frame that too. And just with the trees and the land navigation, and there's, you know, it's definitely far from linear. And it's not just about that path. It's who do you want to be in each one of those situations too. When you are out in the construction site, you are one version of Nathan.
Mm-hmm.
When you are alone with your wife and just you two talking, you're another version of Nathan. When you're alone with your son, you're another version of Nathan. They're all you, and there's massive similarities because they're all you, but you're having to elevate certain pieces of that, right? Right now, you and I are having a conversation. You're another version of Nathan, mm-hmm. right? That's the reality of humanity. So what happens if we are intentional about that and going, well, what are the pieces of me? Who are those people that are doing certain areas, certain things better than I am? What are the patterns that I can follow? Can I elevate and make myself better in this area or over here? So now I'm podcast Nathan and my favorite podcast host is whoever. And so I'm going to emulate a little of that and it's going to make me better. I'm going to step into that role. Then I'm going to step into this role as a man who is a husband. And who do I see that is doing a really, really good job of being a husband? What are the patterns that are there? How can I emulate that? And I'm going to step into that role and become that guy, right? That's one thing that we're very, very intentional about with our kids is you're going to be different people at different times. It's all you.
Mm-hmm.
But what are the patterns of success that you can copy? Step into those roles, perform at your best, go back and reevaluate, step into the next role and go do. All of those things are related to education.
So good. So how can people support what you're doing? How can they continue to learn from the lessons that you've learned? And you know, if you're in a lot of places too, there's a reality. Some of the listeners could be able to get on the internet and find some solutions.
Sure. Yeah, not hard to find. But man, anything I can do to help people, I always tell, feel free to reach out directly to me. It may take me a day or two or three or whatever, but I try to help as many people as humanly possible, whether that's because they DM me on Instagram and that's just, you know, my name, or whether they DM us at the Apogee program, Instagram. You can reach out to me directly, matt@apogeestrong.com. I'm glad to help. And you know, check out Apogee Strong, check out educatingmodernday.com, raisingdragonslayers.com. Like, we're in all of those places. And again, same mission. Let's build strong young people, but reach out directly. I'm glad to help.
Awesome. Thanks so much for your time and, pleasure, appreciate, continuing to follow what work you're doing.
Honor's mine, sir.
There you have it, folks. My interview with Matt Boudreau. I would encourage you to follow him on Instagram. Very active there, putting out a lot of great information at Matt Boudreau, MattBeaudreau. And if that's too many vowels for y'all to follow, obviously we linked that social handle, all the different websites of the initiatives he's been involved with in the show notes here and on our website, spearing.co. And if this was helpful for you, as always, we ask that you share it with a friend, maybe listen to it with your spouse as you guys are trying to contemplate how to make the right changes in education. Hope it was informative to you. As always, have a good one.